Thank you for listening to the Print and Packaging Lab powered by PIA Mid-America. This deep dive is part of our wide format peer group series sponsored by Clampett Paper and Lindenmeyer Monroe. Today, we are speaking with Chris Manley with Graphco.
Today, we are joined by Chris Manley with Graphco. He is a second generation leader in his company. And let's get started. Chris, your dad started this company as an engineering drawing reproduction business routinely in the 70s by shooting 60 by 120 inch negatives, truly large format back then, right?
That's right.
Tell me about your experience and growing up with that and how you got started in the business.
Well, thanks, Jeannie. Thanks. Nice introductory question. So as you mentioned, in 1976, my dad actually purchased the division of the old Adressograph Multigraph company that he had been the vice president of for the previous about 8 or 9 years. That division of AM was called GSO, Graphic Service Operations. And that, as you said, that division did blueprinting, engineering, drawing reproduction of all kinds. And one of my summer jobs was actually shooting and processing those big, huge negatives that we would do for municipalities and engineering companies all around the Midwest. And believe me, if you, as a young guy, if you blew one of those pieces of film that was probably worth about $450, they definitely spoke to you about that after your shift was over. And it happens sometimes.
I bet they did. I bet they did. So today, Graphco represents many of the industry's leading digital, offset, and finishing brands. You've been part of that evolution for a few decades now. Will you walk us through that journey? I know that we've seen at least three major technology revolutions in print during that time.
Well, thank you. And I remember when I kind of signed the book at Graphco in 1985 after graduating from college, my dad advised me that I was joining a mature industry, which if you looked at that definition meant that we were already past the top of the bell curve and kind of on our way back down. And that's quite a long time ago. And amazingly, our company has grown practically every year, despite the bell curve that we're, you know, kind of swimming around under. So in 1985, we were the Hamada dealer. That was an offset printing press from Japan representing, well, we were one of two dealers in Cleveland, Ohio only. We didn't have Columbus or Pittsburgh or Cincinnati or Indianapolis yet. And over the next 5 or 6 years, we took over all five of those major markets for Hamada, because frankly, my dad had a great sales and marketing talent that I was learning slowly but surely as a young guy. And throughout that time, we also sold Horizon finishing equipment all the way from back when these were little desktop collators that, you know, would just take 10 pieces of bond paper and make them into something you could staple, all the way up to today, where those Horizon machines are critical to, you know, all of these inkjet machines and for all kinds of other finishing. So that Hamada product line quickly developed into the Sakurai midsize printing presses. And then shortly after that, the Ryobi brand, which at the time was still small to medium sized machines. But today, RMGT, which is the Ryobi Mitsubishi Graphic Technologies joint venture company, offers, we believe, the finest sheet fed offset printing equipment in the industry, all the way up to 10 color presses, all kinds of automation. We basically invented LED curing for the printing industry way back in 08. And today, RMGT is definitely our leading selling machine. However, this podcast is all about the wide format industry. So about 3 years ago, we were fortunate enough to partner with a company out of Pesaro, Italy, called SD Italy. And they wanted Graphco to represent them for what is now the Augusta F-150R Pro line of CNC routing equipment.
That's awesome. Yes, exactly. I want to go back just a moment and hit on the moment that your dad said you were joining a mature industry. That's a little fascinating to me. We as print professionals here know that print is alive and well and isn't going anywhere. It just continues to evolve, right?
Well, I believe that for sure. And, you know, I mentioned before the bell curve. If you think about 1985, the other job that I could have taken was working for a company called Burroughs Computers that no one even knows what that is anymore unless they were in the computer industry. And Burroughs and about a dozen other mainframe computer companies that sure look like they were on the high end of that bell curve are G-O-N-E.
Yeah.
And today, people still have to buy brochures. They have to buy books. They have to buy pocket folders to put their literature into. And the nice thing I believe is that, yes, print is still tremendously vibrant. And in a lot of ways, the great news is the permanence of the printed product. Most of those other devices that were making something had a very short lifespan for the finished product they made. I mean, I have a brother-in-law who sells rare books, and a book from 1600 is worth tens of thousands of dollars today because it's still something that someone, you know, would want to own and read and have part of their lives. That doesn't happen with all that many products that other industries make that tend to get into a landfill pretty quickly.
Yeah, I love that. We hear phrases like smart, large format more often now. When you hear that, what does that actually mean in practical terms for you?
Okay, so I guess that when I look back over the evolution of a lot of our customers, Graphco customers would be considered the print service providers. A lot of them really evolved into the wide format market primarily because they were watching their commercial print customers buying products like banners and signs and vehicle wraps. So, you know, they very wisely invested in some sort of a 60-inch wide, you know, wide format machine and then started to grow. However, that segment had a lot of down pressure on pricing because there really wasn't a lot of barriers to entry to getting into that market. And most commercial printers were kind of accustomed to buying a big offset printing press or some expensive finishing machine and having a competitive edge for at least a number of years. And so the smart piece to me is that if you're going to be profitable and successful in that segment, you need to have something different than, you know, a latex printer that's just, you know, printing out a banner or a vehicle wrap. The smart piece to me is the automation. So yeah. Our, you know, on the printing side, honestly, the products that make the work that goes through our machines is not really my forte, but on the finishing side, I can safely say that the SD Augusta, with its high level of automation, high quality, and ease of use, is definitely the smart finishing product for the wide format world. And I could go into a little more detail about that if you'd like, Jane.
Yeah, Chris, so the machine that you're talking about is a hybrid printing and cutting device, correct?
No, I'm sorry. What we mean by hybrid is that we have the cutting tooling, like you would see, for instance, on a Zund or a Konsberg machine, which is two of our competitors. But on the same exact platform, we also have routing technology and even automatic stud welding technology that would only be seen in, let's say, an architectural signage type of router. We have both of those on the same platform. the reason we feel that that, well, it is, I mean, the reason we feel it's revolutionary for a print service provider is, let's face it, most of those companies decided to go into wide format because of the advice of their customer. In other words, I'm going to buy this from somebody. I might as well buy from you if you're already doing my booklets, my mailing, my presentation materials. So if you think about it, if the only product that a printer can make is vehicle wraps and vinyl signage and maybe light indoor products, that's all the further that they can take their customer's vision. With an SD Augusta and using probably the same printing equipment that they're already using for the more mainstream and less profitable products, can also let them get into push through signs with backlighting, get into monument signs that, you know, that same exact customer may put in front of a dozen locations in the Philadelphia area if that is where they have their retail outlets. Every monument sign that you see from the side of the road is at least an $80,000 to $90,000 sale. So imagine coming home with a 5 or 10 pack of that when, you know, the average sale of a vinyl sign might be $300 or $400. So that's why we feel like this technology is so valid for the print service provider community that's always been Graphco's mainstay anyway.
That number to me is astonishing, believable, but astonishing, how much those monument signs are.
I mean, I'm looking at one right now for a Presbyterian church, and I mean, I'm sure that was, you know, somewhere between $30,000 and $40,000, and it's not even that great. If you see one with a bunch of video and those other things in, you know, as part of it, they're easily into that kind of a figure, and very profitable business too, by the way, especially if you do it with a low manufacturing cost, like our machine provides.
Wow. Fascinating. What do you think shops are underestimating in the finishing of wide format today?
Well, I think in some ways, trying to think of how to say this correctly. So if a client of theirs would benefit from, for example, a backlit sign that was made using push-through letters and would be a way when they greet the public for their company to look much more professional and more, you know, almost like a national brand, if that printer doesn't have the way to do that job, of course they're going to sell down or sell around that. If, on the other hand, they've got that capability in-house, there's a huge revenue stream available. And most importantly, they're taking care of that customer. Because if that fella's business does better, or that lady's nail salon, for example, or you know, some other retail outlet does well, of course, they're going to buy more brochures, more trifolds, more business cards, more pocket folders, because they've just got a better business going. So, I mean, that's where I feel like the print service provider community could really, really benefit from having these kind of capabilities to offer their customers.
Yeah. I'm going to shift slightly to substrates. Do you think they're becoming more complex, or are they getting to be more standardized and easier to work with across equipment?
Oh, they're evolving about as quickly as the machines that produce them. You know, if it's okay to use a brand name, Plascolite has become a great partner to Graphco. Actually, their national sales manager is at our place today doing samples for the ISA show. But for example, Plascolite now offers branded color substrates. These would be, let's say, 1-inch acrylic with a Huntington Bank green that is literally like a Pantone color, the same as our offset customers will understand. It's the exact green that they need for Huntington Bank, or they would do the right color for a Wells Fargo. And the reason that's so critical is that those companies would buy those signs all over the entire United States, right? I mean, at least Wells Fargo would. They have outlets throughout the entire country. Huntington Bank is in probably 12 states. So the ability to process those substrates successfully is frankly a door opener to being in business with these big, huge brands. But yes, that's just one that's called Fuse, and it's one of their great products, but they have a dozen others that have come out just in the last few years. The challenge out there, and this will sound a little bit pejorative, but if someone has a cutting table, in other words, a device that was really intended to do vinyl and thin materials, and they have a little 1 kilowatt router on it, they can't machine that kind of product very well.
Yeah.
Even if they do, it'll take them 5 hours to do the same work that we do in 20 minutes. So having the right device to process these new substrates is really, really critical. In the same way that a commercial printer who has a press that can run thick board stock is able to do jobs that a printer that has a machine not as well equipped can't do. I mean, it's a very similar analogy to some of the like differences between a packaging printer and a commercial printer in our more traditional segments.
Yeah. I'm thinking about the Wells Fargo sign and I can imagine that having that red already part of the sign cuts down on production time and ink expense and everything else that goes into getting what is on that sign that says Wells Fargo with their logo.
Well, and here's the other side of it, and this does get a little bit techie, but by having, and I think it's north of an eighth of an inch, I want to say it's like 8 or 9 millimeters of that exact color impregnated into the acrylic, it's tremendously more fade resistant than a vinyl sticker that someone printed with inkjet and stuck on top of the same kind of acrylic. And up until Fuse, that was the way a lot of those signs were done. Well, imagine if you're Wells Fargo and you just spent 40 grand to front a building that happens to face south, and it turns out a year later that beautiful color is now faded down to look sort of pink. They're not going to be very happy. And there's that poor sign guy out there either doing it over for free because he didn't buy the right product, or he doesn't have a very happy customer. With some of these new substrates that we machine kit very, very well. And that's, I guess, kind of my message is, in order to put the proper edge on that kind of a product so that it is, that it has the quality that the customer would want, and to be able to do that kind of machining with operators that don't have to be 25-year expert CNC operators because of the automation. A lot of our people that run these machines now actually came out of the design department. So as long as they can handle the mouse and the software and such, the Augusta machine really does the rest with regard to cutting and routing.
Yeah. Well, and what a great transition, Chris. Wanted to talk to you a little bit about workforce and automation and AI and AI has been a buzzword for quite some time now, and I think it's continuing to evolve. When we look at it in the printing industry, we're thinking about how to automate things and how to accomplish what needs to get accomplished with the same teams, because we're still in a little bit of a workforce crisis. How are smart shops using technology to do more with the people that they already have on the floor that they're able to evolve in their careers?
Well, what a great question and very insightful. Thank you. So I'll just share one, I guess I would call it case study experience. And by good luck, we're going to be doing a second press release about this company in about a week. But in suburban Indianapolis, there's a company called AI Innovations. Now, that means the AI meant awning and ovations, and then frankly, they decided to rebrand as AI became like the most common acronym in the whole world. But when we first met with these folks, they had five old-fashioned CNC routers from what is still our largest competitor, a company that starts with M and was recently acquired by another company that starts with K. And they were perfectly good machines and probably would have worked just fine for 10 more years. I mean, they were like old plow horse kind of machines. But the management team there had a vision for the future because those five machines were staffed two shifts a day all the time, and sometimes three shifts a day. And what we ended up seeing as we took a tour of the plant was a huge, like 60-inch television that had all of their production schedule for the routing department up on a display. Well, two-thirds of those job ticket numbers were in red. A bunch of other ones were in yellow, and only a few were in green, and they were all rolling into the yellow or red. Right. I think we all know what red means. That means late.
Yeah.
You know? And in that world, folks, when someone can't get the beginning of the manufacturing process off of those five tables to start doing the painting, start doing the graphic application, start doing all the rest of the steps, the whole company's kind of at a bit of a standstill. So today they now have two of our SD Augusta machines, both equipped with the automatic stud welding technology. Mm-hmm. And they have a few reds, but by and large, they're all yellow and green on that big display board. And those few reds are only because they've probably put 30 to 40% more business through their company as they've been also onboarding this technology. Look, that's the vision of the future for anyone that has volume, in the same way that Grafco has replaced 3 and 4 Heidelberg machines and Komori's in some of these shops and put in one RMGT long perfector, like over at Advertisers Printing in St. Louis. You know, we pulled out three offsets and actually one small one, and all that work now goes on their 10 color. Well, it's the same thing with the SD product, that because of the automation, one machine can now do the work of two or three tables and drastically reduce labor.
Right. Do you see that the labor is, that those firms are reducing the number of people working, or are they reducing the actual laboring of work?
Well, I think that's first of all, it's a great question. It's also one that is very much dependent on that organization. What we have observed, and this is both on the SD side of our business and also the sheet fed offset, is that generally speaking, the workers that were running both the CNC equipment and the offset presses tended to be the more reliable, the more well, you know, sort of acclimated to the workforce people. So they typically find work within that building because they're good workers. You know what I mean? Yeah. They've been there for 10 years. They've been there for 20 years. But what they are now able to do is place someone into another strategic role, also very important, but already know that their like work ethic is very strong. And sadly, it may mean that some of the more entry-level operators and workers are now made redundant, but you're replacing them with like tried and true teammates. So that's what I have seen for the most part. One other thing that I would mention is that even in the CNC side, the training of young people at the vocational level is getting to be less and less and less. And as we know, on the printing side, it's darn near gone altogether. You know what I mean? There really aren't very many strong vocational programs that focus on like sheet-fed offset. It's kind of the same on old school CNC. Well, this Augusta, I mean, frankly, at a lot of our companies, someone in the front that runs a Mac or a PC and does job layout is really placing all of the tool paths, in other words, the like cutting process, into a computer program, much like an Illustrator file is how you would print out a corporate brochure today. It's kind of the same thing. Our product manager, Michael Hoschnecht, has designed a cut by color program that he has found to be a great way to train more entry-level operators, because as long as they can properly map the cutting file based on color, the SD machine will grab the correct router bit, the right cutting blade, operate at the correct speed for that substrate. And we even have things like predictive maintenance. So when those bits and cutting blades are about to get dull based on past history, the machine actually notifies the operator that you should change this tool before it ruins some expensive job, rather than waiting until it tears all the way across some expensive vehicle wrap or something like that, which is typically what happens when a blade gets dull on some of our competitors' machines. So that's the kind of automation that I think really makes sense on the shop floor.
Yeah. And I think we're seeing that type of automation in a lot of brands throughout the printing world, whether it be a digital offset, bindery, finishing equipment, et cetera. Is that predictive maintenance, quality monitoring, workflow assistance? What other technological evolvements are you seeing come to the production floor with automation and AI?
So there is one, and this is a little bit hard to explain, but I'm going to give it my best shot. So, and let's just use a more PSP type of a analogy. Let's say someone has a 4-foot by 8-foot piece of foam core that they printed some kind of a display that needs to be cut out in both round and straight lines. On the SD machine, while we are cutting out that 4x8 product, we are automatically closing down the vacuum zones that have now had the material cut away. Now, the reason that's so critical is that when you open up that table and you allow the vacuum to suck through an opening, the vacuum power on the whole rest of the table is compromised severely. And therefore, that piece of foam core or a piece of acrylic or any other product can shift while it's being cut. On the SD machine, by automatically shutting off the zones that we know we've opened up to the atmosphere and are allowing the vacuum to suck through, we keep a much, much higher registration accuracy, and it's all being done automatically. The computer program knows when that cutting blade leaves zone one and goes into zone two, leaves zone two, goes into three, comes around the other way and starts to work back through the table. None of our competitors have that at all. They have lots of vacuum. They're perfectly good machines, but none of them, you know, goes to that level of automation. Well, that's what you need today, because, you know, when you hire that worker, you don't necessarily want to have to pay the wages and find that unique unicorn that understands how all of this stuff works at the craftsman's level. You're more looking for someone that is going to interface well with the, you know, with the software, they have to understand the job, they have to be good workers. But if every single person involved in this has to be almost like a woodworker, carpenter kind of person, you're looking for a really tough hire versus what we can offer with the SD.
And extensive training, for sure.
And extensive training, sure. And expensive, because that substrate, I mean, I come from the printing world where, you know, 500 sheets of paper cost the guy $100, you know, and that's not good, right? You don't want to throw $100 worth of paper in the garbage because you're doing a make ready. But if you take one of these, you know, 1-inch thick acrylic plates, it's probably $400 worth of material. If that operator screws up any part of that job and it becomes scrap, that's a lot of money to throw into the recycling, you know? So you better have a good quality control and a good automation level, you know, to make sure that you're not wasting lots and lots of expensive materials.
Chris, can you explain to me, just for clarification for me, the vacuuming process there that you're talking about, is that holding the substrate down so that the blade can cut? Is that
exactly? So you have to hold it in place very firmly, Janie, and then as either the blade or the router a bit moves, you don't have that product shift. You know, because like if you just use my hand as the analogy, if you started to cut right here and it's loose, you know, you can see my hand moving away. If on the other hand, it's fixed in place, you can cut a nice, you know, nice round curve there, you know, where my thumb is. So, again, it's honestly, Janie, it's a hard thing to describe to someone that works in that exact industry every day. So I'm sorry if that might have, you know, been a little bit sketchy for you to understand, but once they get it, I have found that folks are like, well, that is a big problem to me, the fact that I don't have very good vacuum on my other brand machine.
I liken it to using a T-square when using an X-Acto blade to cut something. Without that T-square, you don't get a straight line, right? Like I'm holding it down and ensuring that I'm getting what I want. So thanks for the clarification there.
Sure.
Looking ahead 3 to 5 years, where do you think the most meaningful tech adoption will happen in print and finishing?
So within the wide format segment, what I have seen is that from the printing side, I think it's all at this point kind of about the speed and the automation and then the reduction in supply costs. In other words, you know, they already print, you know, many, many colors. The color gamut from wide format is tremendous. So I feel like that side of the business, the technology will be primarily about, if you can do 100 boards an hour right now, how do you get to 125? If you get to 125, how do I get to 200? And I'm sure that they will. You know, a nice thing with inkjet is that you frankly throw more and more heads at these machines and they just kind of automatically go faster. Mm-hmm. As we know, that's not the way it is with sheet fed offset. You know, it's a different world. But where I see, and this is an advertisement for Graphco here in the SD machine, so I guess I'll apologize for that up front. But to me, the real thing is the finishing, the same way it is in the printing world, right? I mean, embellishments are all the rage now. How quickly you can do your finishing is every bit as important as how you do your printing. Well, it's the same thing in the wide format world, in that, you know, as I mentioned before, you take the individual components of a monument sign sitting in front of a school or a church or a retail outlet, and I would believe that the raw materials that went into that $35,000 sign are about 20% of the total cost. That's a lot of value add. That's how printing used to be, right? When a printer could take his cost of paper and triple it, and that's what that was his price, you know? And it was a different world back then. Offset printing today has become a single digit profit margin business to a large extent, or maybe low, you know, low 10 and 15%, where this other segment is still very, very profitable. And that's why I think more print service providers should be pushing their customers into these more durable, more long-term, you know, higher-end signage applications. I mean, part because it's going to help their customer prosper. And if you're not doing that, then you're not doing much for your guy, in my opinion. But it is also a terrific, you know, profit potential for PSPs. And of course, the signage sector is one that is going to continue that as well. And they're a big part of the wide format world too. You know, they're buying Colorados or Arizonas or whatever these big inkjet machines are, you know, just as well as the print service providers are.
Yeah. Well, good. I've got one last question for you. If you had to give one piece of advice about integrating new equipment and automation systems into print operation, what would it be?
Well, Janie, as someone that's been involved in automating print operations since I was a young guy, thank you for a great, great question. And I mean, my real piece of advice would be to do it today. You know, there's really no reason to put off until later the opportunity to reduce your manufacturing cost, to improve your quality, to streamline your operation, and most of all, to better serve your customers through providing them with a better finished product.
Good. Chris, thank you so much for joining us today and having this spirited conversation on wide format.
Well, Janie, what a great opportunity to talk with you and to the print service provider community. So thanks very much for inviting me.
Absolutely. Thank you.
You're welcome.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the Print and Packaging Lab podcast powered by PIA Mid-America. Contact us to learn more about membership and for access to this and other content made for the printing and packaging industry. Get in touch by emailing us at info@piamidam.org.